The following program is being broadcast on the Amazing Women of Power, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International. This show contains motivational language and may not be suitable for negative listeners.
Schemes. I'll choose my friends because apparently they're choosing me. The time is now to pay attention to my destiny.
From his humble studio in Orange County, California, comes a young songwriter with a dream, encouraging others to go after their dreams. Learning from the best in the business and passing it along to you, it's Strongwriter on the radio.
I had the blues, but I made it better, baby. That's why I wrote this song. And now you can sing along.
Yeah. My mind's made up to listen, to learn, and to sit back and relax and just have a great time hearing stories and gaining some wisdom from a great man, a Renaissance man, a magic man. Okay, before I go off the rails, let me introduce myself. My name is Dean Olson. I am the Strong Writer on the radio. It's my goal to keep songwriters and artists musically fit through faith and encouragement, and sometimes just by the pure inspiration of conversation. With my featured guest, you heard him last episode. He is the great Milt Larson, owner of the Magic Castle here in Hollywood, but a self-proclaimed jack of all trades, master of none. That's what he told me. Now, he's covered a lot of ground in his 80 plus years here on this earth and doesn't seem to show signs of stopping. And I'm very happy that I got the chance to have a conversation with him on the phone for this program. So let's pick up right where we left off. We were talking a little bit about, who knows, we were talking about everything that he had been doing. Actually, I think we were talking about a radio show that he does on CRN, Cable Radio Network, called Hear Them Again for the First Time, where he plays lots of old records. And he also mentioned that he and his friend Richard Sherman, who frequently collaborate in songwriting efforts, have put together a segment on that show dedicated to songwriting, and I thought that was really great. But listen, without further ado, and we've had enough ado, let's go to part two of this wonderful interview I had with the great Milt Larson, and we'll talk to you right afterwards. So here you go, in progress.
The theater, I gotta go see it, you know.
Yeah. So you love theater and you love your records. Oh, I had to ask you, do you know Dr. Demento, Barry Hanson?
Sure.
Do you personally, or do you know well of him?
Well, I know him personally, but I don't think I've talked to Gary in maybe 12 years.
Oh, that's pretty recent anyway, but yeah, I figured that reminds me that, you know, how big his collection is. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's great, you know. He does exactly the same kind of show I'd like to be doing.
Yeah, he finds all the old greats. And.
Oh, yeah. But well, he plays our Smash Flops all the time.
Yeah? You dropped the fact that you liked Stan Freberg. That sort of reminds me of that vein of the comedy that you had when you and Dick, I call him Dick.
please do.
When you and he were creating Smash Flops, it sounds like you just did it for the joy of, you know, cracking each other up, right?
Well, originally, we were asked to write some material for a Las Vegas lounge act, the characters. They were a very popular act, and they wanted some material asked Dick and I to think about something they could do, and that's when we came up with the concept of the Smash Flops. And Dick's father had written a major hit in 1927, and it was Lindbergh, the Eagle of the USA, mm-hmm. and a big hit. And that was when Lindbergh made his solo flight across the Atlantic and was a hero of all time, you know. And so we were saying, what would happen if Lindbergh, you know, this song came out like the day he landed, and it had sheet music on the stands like the day after he landed. And what they had to write it like while we was flying, you know. So then, so we said, well, what would happen if Lindbergh had engine trouble, sank in the Atlantic Ocean? That would have been terrible because the song wouldn't have made it. And that gave us the inspiration doing songs that would have been hits except for small twists of fate. Hmm. And so the first one we came up with was Bon Voyage Titanic, mm-hmm. which was kind of the house number we followed from there on in. And we did songs about, you know, Hot Hot Time in Leakers, New Jersey, when the Hindenburg lands today. Of course, yeah. It blew up.
Yeah.
And then we did songs about Christopher Columbus, You Big Bag of Steam. And those are in our new remastered flops thing. But we wrote those. Some of those songs go back about 50 years.
And you wrote almost a couple of dozen of these songs, and you put them in a big collection. Was that how big the Smash Flops was originally? Was a bunch of these songs?
Yeah, the original was an LP that we put out in the early 50s. And then we had a series of two or three LPs. They were very popular. And the first Smash Flops who got up to, they used to call it, top 10 in Music City, and we were in the top 10. But the and that was a time when Tom Lehrer was doing kind of weird humor and all that sort of thing. So the second album of ours was called Sing a Song of Sickness, and it's kind of a wacky record. That's now called Bad Barbershop Ballads.
Oh, yeah.
But we had some really evil things going on there. But we're always taking considering our age now, we were really called kind of the mavericks of songwriting.
Yeah, I believe that.
In the 50s and 60s. And we reissued some of the songs. I was kind of active in the record business with other things, the jazz and the comedy. We did an album of like Beatrice Kay and Spencer Quinn. And one album that was Spike Jones alumni after he passed away. We did the whole arrangers and the whole band doing
nice
songs as if they were done by him. So I was kind of active in the record business on the Record Academy board for about 8 years.
Wow.
Then kind of got away from that. Mm-hmm. And then I would like to say the clamor for our work got the thing. So then we started putting out some CDs. And
cool.
And we put Flops out as a CD, but that one has been out of print for quite a while now. But this new one is remastered tracks from the various original ones that we did, and, plus two new ones, which are were really favorites of ours, which are two brand new Smash Flops. One is Palin for President Polka.
Right.
And that is, as you know, all the people who are disappointed she's not running this time. Yeah, of course, she keeps putting her foot in her mouth. And so it's the other one is the fracking song, and that's by the hard-headed workers who really love the task of breaking the soil and getting the gas. And if you take a subject like that, you can't help but have fun with it.
Yeah,
and
it's the controversy that sort of stirs up the imagination, and you get on a roll with it, huh?
Well, that's it, and people don't realize we could easily do a Smash Flops about Donald Trump these days.
Of course.
Because
but there's always, there's always something.
Every time he says anything, he gets laughs, you know.
I mean, the whole world is, especially today, it's fodder for everything that you could come up with tons of songs. But then, again, it sounds like all the subject matter that you had, you know, the Hindenburg, et cetera, Confederate victory song and things like that, they, you have to sort of throw, damn be the consequences that people get offended on it, right?
Well, you know, it's a very fine line. And I think Dick and I have done a great job of staying on the good side of that fine line, because we would never write a Smash Flops about wars in Afghanistan or, you know, the Bay of Pigs or anything. I mean, that would just be very offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And we come right up to the line of being offensive, but hopefully we stop just before we are going to hurt somebody. Or I think that's the main thing. Let's say there's a relative that, well, we wrote about the Titanic and it sank in 1912. So when we wrote our songs, they were 50 years beyond that sinking. And so it wasn't all that bad. And of course, the Hindenburg was a horrible disaster. But, you know, there are only 38 people on it, and there are not too many people we could offend. And, And it's a really crazy song, even though the thought behind it is sick as hell, you know.
Yeah, so, but not everything that you wrote together was morbid subject matter. I mean, you got songs about the Tucker. And,
oh, yeah, we love the Tucker song. But one of my favorite songs is Spruce Goose.
Oh, right,
which
right.
Which has to do with Howard Hughes' plywood boat. When the Spruce Goose takes to the sky, proving lumber yards can fly, you know.
So it's just a bunch of, when you get down to it, it's a bunch of follies, you know, and the people, and sung from the point of view of people who were really for it.
Oh, yeah.
I guess, yeah. So you and Dick would get together and pretend that you were writing in the moment, like back then.
Well, that we've always kind of pretended that we were songwriters writing those songs at the time they happened. And
yeah.
And one time we did a lot of songs for the Randy Sparks and the new Christy Minstrels.
Uh-huh.
And, on the Space Flops. At that time, we called ourselves, I forget what it's, something, Garfunkel, or it wasn't Garfunkel, but we had two phony names, and which Randy wanted to do that, so he was talking about these two broken-down songwriters, which now we are broken down, but at that time we were very young.
Well, you know,
at any rate, but like I say, we have a very, very unusual warped sense of humor, and over the years, people have been laughing at our work, so we're happy.
I'm glad you two got together. Not everybody is aware that you know, you've collaborated for all this time. Did you work on any other projects besides that, and the band Barbershop Ballads? And was there anything else that you wrote for you know, public consumption? Or,
well, yeah, you know, the musical I mentioned, which is a full-scale stage musical. We played it in about 5 theaters so far.
Uh-huh. And would that be Pizzazz?
We're constantly rewriting musicals until it finally goes someplace. But the but our second, we did another musical for radio. Charlie sent me his own Roaring Twenties type songs, and we did those. And then we did a show called Dogs. It was a kind of a takeoff on Cats, obviously.
Right.
And the Sherman Brothers wrote a lot of dog songs, you know.
Yeah.
They wrote Lassie Come Home. And
oh, did they? I don't remember that. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
I didn't know that they wrote Lassie Come Home.
Yeah, they were The Magic of Lassie, one of those.
Oh, okay, but it was a Lassie song, yeah.
And various songs about the, you know, the dogs in their Disney pictures. So we did a whole show with Sherman Brothers dog songs. Dick and Bob and I wrote one song for the Doghouse Ball, which was a very wonderful thing. But my wife is a costume designer, and a very fine costume designer.
Wow.
She did all the costumes for our musical called Dogs, and I think 1,500 human hair wigs that were sewn together to make dog costumes.
Oh, actual dog. I get you.
One time, we were doing the show. We invited the cast to bring their dogs in to see the show. We get good publicity that way. And they did. And the only problem is that all the costumes ended up with fleas. So we had to shampoo the costumes with dog flea repellent.
Wow.
To make the fleas go away. It's one of those lessons you learn in life. Do not make dog costumes and invite the dogs to visit them. So we've written a lot of show songs over the years for, there was a show called Victory Canteen, which
Bob
and Dick wrote the music, and Bobby Lahr and I wrote the book, and that had a good life. That turned into a show called Over Here, which was on Broadway with Patty Andrews. And our show at the Ivor, we had a 7-month run with Patty Andrews and the Andrews sisters, and that was in the early 70s.
Wow, how nice.
You know, we've been pretty active.
How's that Victory Canteen? Has that been put down, or is it? Does it play anyplace else these days?
Victory Canteen had a run here in Hollywood, and then they wanted to turn it into a show for New York, which the Andrews had the same idea of a World War II musical. But at that time, Bobby was having a health problem. We wrote the book for that show.
Uh-huh.
And the Shermans wrote the words of music. I had just done signing the leases and started work on a Mayfair Music Hall, and Bobby was not in good health, and he actually passed away about a year after that.
Mm.
And so we just didn't want to go to New York and spend a year of our lives working on a musical. So Bob and Dick wrote a whole new score for over here. It was a big hit in New York with the Andrews Sisters. And,
excellent. Excellent.
Played a couple of years in New York.
Yeah.
I turned the Victory Canteen into a screenplay, and it's a wonderful movie called Wings Over Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
All about home front in Kansas during World War II.
Oh.
Unfortunately, it's a screenplay that is still on my shelf because nobody bought it. But,
well, that happens, yeah.
But it's a really good movie, so if anybody's listening and has a few million dollars and wants to do a movie, I've got one here.
Before,
but, you know, I've got a whole filing cabinet full of unsold shows if anybody needs any.
Before it gets too late, for the songwriters that are listening to you and I talk, when you and Richard would sit down and when you would write these songs for, say, Smash Flops, were you the half that carried the weight of penning the lyrics, or was it a little bit of like, hey, I'll say this and then I'll say this? Or
no, it's actually, like I say, all of our songs, it's Words and Music by Sherman and Larson.
Ah, okay.
But when we decide to write something, like these two newer songs, we said, well, all of our songs are about Christopher Columbus, shoot big bag of steam and stuff, and we figure, well, we don't have any songs about today, so we said, what's today? What can we have fun with? And of course, immediately that Sarah Palin came up, and so, and then we started talking about, well, what would be fun for Sarah Palin and stuff. So then we came up with, yeah, let's write a polka. That would be kind of hometown for Sarah.
Yeah,
and then we started playing with the lyrics of, you know, the Sarah Palin, but your ship is
sailing, or poles you are ailing. I remember some of that, yeah.
Then we kick those words around, and Dick will start plucking out something on the piano. That, well, let's do this. And Dick can write anything. He can write any song style ever invented.
I'm fascinated by that. He is really something else.
There was a Sherman Brothers album that's still out there called Tin Panorama.
Okay.
You can get it on iTunes.
Yeah.
And they wrote a series of songs for Professor Von Drake, the duck.
Oh.
And it is a takeoff on every style of songs. If you ever have a chance, go to iTunes and punch up Tin Panorama with Sherman Brothers.
I'm writing
it
down.
They are hilarious. The song is like, and their cast of imitators, Paul Frees, people like that.
Hey, cool.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite records. And incidentally, Smash Flops is on iTunes as we speak.
Yes,
so
yes.
For 90 cents, you can listen to one of my records.
Did you sit at a, like when he was at the piano, did you sit with him in the room and create that stuff? Or did you sort of, during the day, think of things and then you bring it to him and
no,
say, what do you think of this?
When we write these days, I've got a piano in my little radio studio, and he'll come over. We get together. I see Dick just about every week, and then we have lunch at the castle on Fridays. And
oh, nice!
And we'll maybe knock off a couple of our songwriter spots for my radio show. And then if we want to write a song, he'll sit at the piano, and I'll sit at my desk and throw lines back and forth. And sometimes we'll do a whole song in a half a day.
Jeez, that's good.
Because the song may take months of thinking about it, and then when we finally sit down and write something, it kind of flows. You know?
Oh, okay, got
it. That's with any great partnership. I think we have a great partnership because we love each other. But it's, Rodgers and Hart. I mean,
yeah.
Richard Rodgers was one of the great composers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And Larry Hart was one of the greatest lyricists of all time. And it isn't who did what first. It's that they sit down and write songs together.
Good point.
Almost all Warren and Dubin and Cal Martin Ruby, all these songwriting teams.
Absolutely.
I used to, in my earlier days of radio and TV, I wrote with a fellow by the name of Red Baker, and we had about five little joke books that we did, and started writing radio and TV. And then he was inclined to be a comedian, so he went off to be a comedian, and we stopped writing. But collaboration is just exactly that. Two people thinking as one mind.
Yes.
And like Siamese twins, you're joined together, and out of Dick's fingers on a piano and my fingers on a computer keyboard, somehow it ends up being a song.
And
nobody knows why.
Yeah, and it's you can come up with the stuff on your own, but it's I don't know, it's so much more magical to, you know, no pun intended, to get another person involved, and you come up with something entirely exponential. You know, you never know.
My writing partner for many years, Bobby Lahr, and did a lot of shows, and but we actually did think as one person. A lot of times, as a writer, sometimes it's just very hard to. You know, they call it writer's block, where you look at a page and can't think of anything. And if there's two people, all of a sudden you'll start questioning what you're doing, and all of a sudden you're writing, you know.
Yeah.
It flows. And most writers work as teams. Very few people just sit down and write. And the people that can do that are brilliant. But I need somebody. I'm a procrastinator. I could have the Oscar for procrastination. And I'll put off things forever. But I was writing through the consequences. Our production meeting was Tuesday at 9 o'clock,
uh-huh,
in the studio. And at that time, there were three writers on the show, and we were each responsible to bring in 15 playable acts. They could be audience participation, they could be a reunion, they could be practical jokes, hidden camera stuff. But whatever it is, we had to bring in 15 of them.
Mm.
And then the producer would go over the thing and put together the shows. But I would be writing my last act for the production meeting, driving into the parking lot of the studio, you know, my little yellow pad, because it was allowable. You could ad-lib your thing. So I'd be doing that and walk through the production meeting door, still inviting my last act. And I had all week to come up with something, but I'd read most of it that trip to the studio.
I'm glad you admitted that you procrastinate. That's where I'm coming from too. I'm a member of the Procrastinators Club. I just haven't gotten around to signing up, you know. But that's how I when I think about that, that's even Richard, I'm joking around, but you know, Richard Sherman yesterday told me that he was, he even at his age and at his level, he still looks at a blank page and panics sometimes.
Oh, sure.
And well, I was just wondering, do you go through that too? And do you just sort of write it out until it comes to you?
No, you know what you do is you write a bunch of crud, and I'll sit down and start writing something. If I do like a weekly blog, I like doing that, but I'll sometimes write things that don't make any sense at all, and then I'll go back and say, well, this is really bad, and then I rewrite it, and it comes out okay, you know. But the best thing, my mentor in this business was a comedy writer by the name of Snag Waris. He was a head writer for Jackie Gleason and all the old comedians back in the 30s and 40s and things. And he took me on kind of as a teenage writer. And he said, the thing you have to do as a writer, get up every morning and write something.
Mm.
He said, it doesn't matter if, he said, well, just watch a radio show or a TV show and pretend that you're employed by that person and write a sketch or write a screenplay, write anything you want, but sit down and write it. And then nobody will even look at it. And then you put it in your filing cabinet, and someday, old like he was at that time, he said, then somebody wants something, you reach into your filing cabinet and bring out something you did 20 years ago, and they'll buy it. I said, well, that's good advice. So here at the castle, every week I write a little, like one-page column for our Friday lunch menu thing, and I got in that habit. So,
oh, great.
You know, a columnist for, like, say, you know, the Hollywood Reporter, LA Times, or anything, who has to put in a column every day, and they write it because the people will send them items, and then they'll expand on it, or they'll think of something. But the deadline is a deadline.
Yeah.
And If you don't meet that deadline, you don't get paid.
That's right.
It's pretty simple. So that's where the procrastination part stops.
So.
You know, if you can't produce, you don't get paid. And so about that time, you start creating again. The creative process is all based on, I used to go to New York occasionally, and I'd say charging up my batteries, because in New York, everybody's always working. They get up in the morning and they're having meetings. And so in Hollywood, we all sit under the palm tree at the beach and wait for a coconut to fall on our head. And then, it's laid back, and, everybody in Hollywood, go out for a long lunch, and then you talk about it. Maybe sooner or later you talk about a deal.
Uh-huh.
In New York, no. I got three deals going, and I got to catch a cab, which you can't do in New York anyway. But so it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, it's a faster...
I love Hollywood. I use the line all the time. I was born in the Far East, which, wait a minute, and I'd say Pasadena, which is true.
That's where you grew up, right?
Yeah, and I had some property down in Balboa in your Orange County.
Oh, yeah. Nice place down there.
Now we live in Santa Barbara, but if we're still in the ocean, I've always liked that part.
Also a nice place, yeah.
But it's a laid-back life, Santa Barbara is kind of like, people, they don't honk their horns at people, and they kind of, tomorrow's another day.
But it's a hard commute to get in if you want to go down that Magic Castle from Santa Barbara. You got to go at the right time, because you'd be sitting in traffic.
Well, I've got a really good thing that I do. I'm here at the castle Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And Friday afternoon, I get on the Amtrak train.
There you go.
And go up to Santa Barbara on the train, and then my wife picks me up. We only live about 5 minutes from the train station. And then I'm there Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and I get back on the train on Tuesday and come down to the Burbank Airport, which is a train station. And my associate here picks me up at the airplane. We go to have lunch usually at the smokehouse on the way back to the castle.
Mm-hmm.
And so what could be better than that?
Sounds good to me.
The business class on the train. We've got Wi-Fi. I can play with my computer and write things. So,
oh, nice.
So
this is the way to do it.
Commute that much. I do, but I do it on the train track rather than the freeway. And it's so cool. On the train, you look out the window and see all the people on the freeway all parked. And okay, goodbye. And,
well, there you go.
With the cost of gas these days and stuff, it's not terribly impossible to take the train.
Yeah, it jumps from time to time, and I've been
doing that for a long time. It used to be that the Surfliner train to Santa Barbara would only be about 5 cars long, and now it's 3 times that, because a lot of people are taking the train.
Well, thanks so much, Milt. I'm going to make sure I let people know where they can get Smash Flops. I'm sure it's iTunes and some of these other outlets. And tell me about Magic Castle Records. That's what it's on, or at least it was back then, right?
Yeah, well, we originally, our albums were on various, we had the Pip Records originally, and then it turned into Electric Lemon Records, and then we got out of the business for a while. But we started selling Band Barbershop Ballads in the gift shop at the castle.
Uh-huh. So that was part of it.
What the hell? We just call it Magic Castle Records. And so the new one is Magic Castle Records, and then we're going to put out the Spike Jones one on Magic Castle. So we're kind of back in the record business again.
What year was Band Barbershop Ballads?
Band Barbershop, the current CD version has been out about, 7 or 8 years.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, back then, what did you have to go through to publish your recordings or start your own label, or was it pretty much a private thing that you did for the club?
Well, basically, it was a private thing. That the when I was in the record business, I did about 20 albums of various things, and concerts and things. And in those days, it was very difficult to do albums. You had masters and stampers and all that kind of stuff. But today, anybody with a laptop computer can be in the record business.
That's right.
And we deal with a distributor in New York, Apple, or whoever they are. And so they handle everything. It's if we do a record, it goes to the distributor. Then they make sure the stores get it in the iTunes and all that stuff. So it's a process. And our record's very well produced. It's very professional. It's all done. Our latest flops were on a professional studio, and the remastering was brilliantly done by the engineer and everything. So
that's good to know.
It's like a brand new album.
Times do change, but you know, Creative Enterprise still remains pretty consistent, I think. So that's good to know that. I'm just thrilled that I got to talk to you finally, because you know, Richard talked you up, and
well, great. By and see us at the castle, and you know, I'm here Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays.
I'd love to. Yeah,
you could come on up and say hello.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah, all the greats have performed there. I mean, you got some. Now that you've been sort of a curator of all these guys, like Harry Blackstone and Mark Wilson, and and Doug Henning. Well, these guys aren't with us.
No, almost every magician of note is a member of the castle, or was a member of the castle.
Yeah,
and it's a matter of, you know, it's like the old days of playing the Palace in vaudeville. You know, if magicians haven't played the castle, they're not professional.
kind of a badge of honor, huh? Isn't it? Yeah.
Sure.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I've only been there, I think, twice in my lifetime, you know, for special occasions, because that's what you
do. Come and see us again. It's beautiful. You know, I had a fire back in 2011.
Oh, and that's
true. Damage, but we rebuilt, and it's more beautiful and better now than it was before.
So. I forgot about the fire. Yeah, how did you bounce back from that pretty good?
Oh, yeah. Well, we never closed down. We just had to curtail it for about 3 or 4 months. And then, the parts of the castle that were affected in the old house were beautifully rebuilt. And we're stable to... castle is the thing. It's very hard to explain in that exception. But come up and see us.
Well, you're very loved in this town, and I consider it a pleasure and an honor that I got to have you on the show, so thanks.
Well, great.
All
right. Okay, my friend.
You take care now. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. There you go. And that's Milt Larson. It's hard to sum it up. We covered so much. Yes, he's known for the Magic Castle, but as you heard, he just runs the gamut. And make no mistake, we did talk about songwriting, and he did have some insights, so I learned. I hope you did. And when I was a young kid, I most definitely was interested in magic, so it was just fun to hear all those stories about the Magic Castle. And I'm going to have to take him up on it. You heard him. He invited me. That's just awesome. I want to thank him once more. A big, big thank you to Milt Larson for coming on my show. He has added something very special to the program, and I really appreciate that. I'm going to have to get going, though. The collection of songs called Smash Flops was something that we discussed earlier in the show. Please go to iTunes and do a search for Sherman and Larson, or look up Smash Flops, and you can check out all those tunes. They're pretty cool. They're funny and clever. And if you'd like to learn more about the Magic Castle, you can go on the internet. It's very simple. www.magiccastle.com for all that info. Love the Magic Castle. And Milt Larson. He was fantastic. So, until next week, this is Dean Olson, the Strong Writer on the radio, saying, let's all put our best pens forward and be strong writers together. Go forth, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you next time. Take care. Goodbye now.
You've been listening to Strong Writer on the Radio with your host, Dean Olson, on the amazing Women and Men of Power, world's leading positive programming network powered by Raven International.